Okay. Verna, when and where were you born?
A little town called Tatum, Texas. It's called East Texas, and then Russ County.
And when was that?
August 27th, 1906.
And who were your parents, and what did they do?
Well, Jewel and Eula Deckard. And my father was a blacksmith in that little town. And my mother didn't work. She was just a housewife. He had a very interesting business, blacksmith. Then he went into repairing automobiles when cars came out. He started his blacksmith shop about 1902. And then when cars came in about 1908, he bought a car, tore it down, put it back together, and taught himself how to be a mechanic. Then he became a blacksmith and a mechanic because there were cars, lots of horses and a few cars in that little town. The farmers would come in on Saturdays and bring their horses, and what few had their cars would bring their cars to him.
Were there other blacksmiths in that town?
No, he was the only one. Had no competition at all. He made all the money that was to be made in that field because no one else wanted to come to a little town like that. Population was just 500.
And how about your grandparents?
Well, my grandmother and my grandfather on my father's side, they were slaves' children. They were, one was eight. My grandfather was 8 years old when the slaves were freed, and my grandmother was 11. She was 3 years older than my grandfather. But she remembered lots about the slave days, and at nights, instead of having radios and TVs to look at, we'd sit around my grandmother and she'd tell us slavery time stories. She was a good storyteller, and she used to tell us more things about things that happened. If you saw that movie Roots, well, I had heard all about those happenings before that came out because my grandmother had told me things that were very similar to what was in that movie.
Do you remember any stories in particular that she told?
Well, yeah, she'd tell us about when one of the slave men did something that he wasn't supposed to do. He would get so many lashes, you know, with a whip, like the whip the horses with. They would give him so many lashes for punishment. And, of course, at nights, if the master decided he wanted one of the slave women, he would just come into the slave cabin and make the husband get out, and he'd get in bed with his wife, and she'd have babies by the white man, baby by her husband. So she was just a tool as far as he was concerned because she was his property, so he could do what he wanted to with her. And poor man couldn't do anything about it. He had to just go out and take it. He'd go out of the room. He couldn't stand there and watch.
Were they also in Texas?
That was in Palestine, Texas, where she was a slave girl. A little town called Palestine. And then when they were free, they moved to Tatum, where I was born.
And your grandparents on the other side of the family?
Well, my mother's father was a German. He was white. And my grandmother, that was... She was mixed. She was African and part Indian, I think. Or my grandmother on my father's side, her father was an Indian. And her mother was a slave woman, but her father was an Indian. That was on my father's side. But my mother's side, her father was a German, and her mother was a black woman. So we all mixed up. And my grandfather, on my father's side, his father was Scotch. So we all mixed up with Scotch, German, African, and Indian. Four different nationalities.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Not living. They all passed on.
How many did you have?
My mother had six children altogether. But four of them died at babies. No, let's see, three of them died when they were babies, and one died when he was about 10 years old. And then my brother's not dead, I forgot. Yeah, he's still living, but same as dead, I don't know where he is. He just went on off and abandoned us, so I don't know where he is. But he's not dead, I don't think.
So for most of your life, you haven't known your brothers and sisters?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When did you come to Los Angeles?
1924.
And why did you come here?
Well, in 1922, my father had to leave Texas on the spur of the moment because, let's go back. 1919, the little town where I was born, where he had the blacksmith shop and the automobile repair shop, well, he was making so much money that they just couldn't stand the idea of this black man making all this money. So they burned his buildings down. And that's why he left that little town, Tatum. He moved away from Tatum to another town in Texas called Terrell. Terrell is near Dallas. And he stayed in Terrell about 5 years. But he only had an automobile repair shop in Terrell. And so my mother was real light, and we had a lady to come and visit us who was also real light. And you wouldn't know that she was colored because her father was white also. And so Papa was taking her around sightseeing in this town in Terrell. And my mother wasn't with him, but everybody there knew who my mother was, although she didn't look colored. But they knew who she was. But they saw my dad with this other real light lady carrying her around town. And they assumed that she was a white woman. And he had his nerve, you know, taking a white woman around. So that night, after she left, he took her to the station and she left that day, early part of the evening. So that night, the same night, they came to my father's garage and said, "Deck, look at my battery." And when he went to look at the battery, he stooped over and took the floorboards out of the car. They hit him in the head with a sledgehammer, trying to knock him out and trying to push him in the car. And they were going to take him out and tar and feather him. He said he saw the tar and feathers in the car, but he didn't have an idea it was for him. And so they tried to push him in the car. But they didn't succeed in knocking him out. When they hit him, instead of it knocking him out, he got so mad, like a bull, he said, he just got mad and came up fighting. And so they were stunned that they didn't knock him out, you know. And so there were six of them, and four of them had gotten out of the car and gone in the back of the garage to hold the guns on the boys that worked for my dad so that they couldn't come out to his to help him. But they overlooked my brother. My brother was standing in front of the garage, just standing there. He said he should have been in the back working, but just, I guess God just planned it that way. And he was just standing out there in front, and they overlooked him. They didn't pay him any attention because they thought he was a little white boy, I guess. And so when he saw them knock my father in the head, he ran over to my father's rescue. I think he was about 15 years old then. And he ran to my father's rescue, and the two of them outfought those two men who were trying to get my father in the car. And they got away from him. But they shot at him as they were running, and they did shoot my father in the meat part of his arm, flesh part of his arm, but it wasn't a serious wound. But where they hit him in the head was serious, because they had to take stitches in there, in his head. But my brother, he ran zigzag across the vacant lot. He said he'd seen that in the silent movies, and he thought about that while they were shooting at him. He said, "Run zigzag, they won't hit me." So he ran zigzag, and they didn't hit him, but they were shooting at him, but they didn't hit him. But they did hit my father. But anyway, my father ran home, went to the doctor, called the doctor. The doctor came over to the house and sewed up his stitches. And the next morning, he and my brother left to come to Los Angeles. That's what caused him to leave, because he figured they'd come back. Since they didn't succeed that night, he figured they'd come back later and try to kill him. And so he left the next day. He and my brother drove out here in 1922. And he stayed a year and worked. My brother, he wouldn't come back. But the following year, after a year, my father came back, because my mother and I were still there. And one of the boys that my dad had working for him, he had trained him well enough to continue running the business. So this was my cousin, too. He was my first cousin. His name was Tommy Deckard. And Tommy ran the automobile business while Papa was gone. That took care of my mother and I, because he knew the business just as well as my father did. So my father came back after a year.
Did he know anybody here in Los Angeles when he decided to come here?
Yes, my uncle and aunt was already out here, and they had been trying to get him to come anyway, so he knew them. But he got connected with a man who was running the garage and worked as a mechanic. So when he came back home after a year, he stayed there a year, and the following year, which was 24, he brought my mother and I out here on a visit my brother, because my brother wouldn't come back. He stayed out here. So we came back to visit my brother in 1924. And that's when I ran off and got married, because I didn't want to go back to that old bad Texas. I was calling it old bad Texas then, because the way they treated us, you know. And so I came out here, and people were so nice that I decided, well, I'm not going back to Texas. And I couldn't talk my people into letting me stay out here and go to school. So the only way I could stay was to slip off and get married. And I did, and Mom and Papa went back and sold out everything, and then they moved back here in 25, but I came in 1924.
And they wouldn't let you stay here just with your brother?
No, because he wasn't married. He was single, and he wasn't keeping house, and they said, well, there wouldn't be no woman around to look out after you. So, and my aunt and uncle, they were working out in service. They worked for James Cruz. He was a silent motion picture director. And Betty Compson was his wife. And they were working for them and living on the place, so they didn't have a house either.
What kind of work were they doing?
They called it a couple job. She was the cook and he was the butler and the chauffeur. And they made $250 a month. That was a good salary then. And they stayed on the place. They didn't have any expenses because they lived on the, they had living quarters for them on the place. They lived out in Flint Ridge, California. And he took me out there to visit them. Oh, they had a beautiful home, swimming pool, 3 or 4 cars. It was really, that was a treat for me to go and visit them.
How old were you?
17.
And where did you stay what did you do when you were here, when you first decided you wanted to stay?
Oh, well, when I first came, the first part of the summer, we came to, we came in May. May, soon school was out in Texas. Well, Papa made me go to summer school, and I didn't really want to go, but he made me go. And I'm so glad afterwards that he did, because then that's when I realized how much better the schools were out here than they were where I had been going to school in Texas. We had very poor schools there. And those little towns where we lived, the schools were very poor. But to me, when I lived there, they weren't poor because I didn't know any better. But when I was exposed to something better, well, then I realized how I was being cheated. And I decided, well, I'm not going back down there and go to school. I want to go to school out here. So that's...
Do you remember the school? Here?
Polytechnic High School.
Oh.
Yeah, they had a summer school there. They just had one summer school open, and that was the only one open. And kids from all over town came to Polytechnic. Kids, I was living on the east side. Most of the colored lived on the east side, but a few lived on the west side. So those on the west side came over there, and those on the east side came from all over because there was only one summer school open. So I got to meet the cream of the crop in L.A. while I was there. And I was a very popular girl because I was a new girl from Texas with my own car. And that was unusual. Nobody had a car, you know. Well, one other girl, Dr. Diggs' daughter, Gwendolyn Diggs, she had a car at her disposal. It wasn't her own car, but her father would let her bring it to school sometime. So she'd drive to school one day, and I'd drive one day. We'd pick each other up. And then after school, we'd go to the beach in the car, and whoever had the car, we'd get in one car and go to the beach after school was out.
How did you get to have a car?
Well, Papa had bought me that little Ford, 1924 Ford coupe, and I had driven it out here from Texas. And we came in two cars. He had a Ford touring car. It was a 1924 touring car. And then he bought me this little Ford coupe, 1924 Ford coupe. So we came in the two cars. And so I drove all the way out here, although he had a boy along to help drive. But I decided, well, this is my car, and I don't want nobody to drive in my car. So I drove the whole distance, which was about 2,000 miles, I guess, then, because we didn't have the beautiful freeways like we have now. But we stopped every night, and we camped along the way. We couldn't stay in the motels, and you couldn't eat any place you wanted to eat either. If you did, you had to go in the kitchen and eat. So Papa brought a little tent along, and we set up camp every night. We slept in a tent. And if he'd see a rabbit on the way, he'd stop and kill the rabbit, and we'd cook the rabbit. Mom would cook the rabbit for dinner. She had a little coal stove. It was really fun. It was just like a camping trip. Only took us 7 days to get out here. And when we came in, the highway brought you right through downtown Los Angeles. I have pictures of that, too. And we had on the car, Papa had a sign on the car, from Terrell to Los Angeles. And as we drove through the downtown section of L.A., which the highway brought us right through downtown, the people saw this dusty car with the luggage on the top and the sign, Texas to Los Angeles, and they all hollered, "Hello, Texas!" And we just felt we had a welcome committee waiting for us because the crowd was just hollering, "Hello, Texas!" Because it's definitely from Texas with that dirty car and all this luggage and the sign on it, you know. So right away I fell in love with Los Angeles because everybody was so friendly.
How did you meet your husband? You said you hurried up to get married.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had gone to school, you know, the summer school, and in those days the kids had lots of little house parties every weekend, like on a Friday night, somebody have a little house party. So I met him at a little house party. Some friend of one of the little girls I'd met at school had a little house party and invited the kids from all over town. So I met him at this little house party. He just came up and asked me for a dance. Nobody introduced us. He just asked me for a dance. And I gave him my phone number. And I didn't take his. In those days, girls didn't call up boys, you know. And so then he called me up. And it was so funny. I met another fellow that same night named Lewis. His name was Lewis, Arthur A. Lewis. And then I met another fellow that night named Lewis. But his first name was Lewis, and his last name was something else. So I'm expecting Arthur Lewis to call me, because he told me he was going to call me the next night. And I was expecting him to call me. And this other fellow named Lewis called me, and he said, "This is Lewis." And I thought it was the one, no, I mean Arthur, the one that I wanted to hear from, call me. And he said, "This is Lewis." But I thought he was the other fellow. I thought he was the one whose first name was Lewis. And I wanted to hurry up and get him off the phone because I wanted the phone to be open for Arthur Lewis to call me, you know. And it was Arthur Lewis I was talking to, but I didn't realize it, you know. And I almost lost him. I almost didn't get to meet him because he said he sort of got disgusted. He thought probably I was just trying to put him off, you know. But something made him call me back anyway. So when he called me back, then I realized he was the one that I was expecting to call. The other one that never did call, but I thought it was the other one, you know. So then he wanted to know if he could. Now that was Saturday night he called. So he wanted to know if he could come over on Sunday. And I said, "Yes, I'll be home after church, you know."
Where were you staying?
I was staying over on Compton Avenue, 50th and Compton, over here near where that Hearst Girls group got killed. Let's see, what did they call that? SLAC? You know, Patty Hearst, when she got kidnapped? Well, that group that had kidnapped her. They got cornered over there in that same area, like 54th and Compton. And they burn them up in the house, you know, because they wouldn't come out. Well, anyway, I was living in that area. We were rooming with a nice couple over there, elderly couple over there, 50th and Compton Avenue. And
so Arthur came over on Sunday?
Yeah, Arthur came over on Sunday. And I told him I'd be home after church. So I came home. I was late getting home from church, and my parents had all gone and left me. We had all planned to go to the beach. And that was the outing for Sundays, and to go to the beach and play around in the sand. But the people that was taking my parents to the beach, they got tired of waiting on me because I was late getting home from church, you know. And so they went on off and left me. And so I was home alone with a lady who we were rooming with, whom we were rooming with. She was there. And so I was just worrying about, what am I going to do now? My folks left me here. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I had forgotten that Arthur said he was coming over that Sunday. And he came. And oh, I looked out and I saw him coming. I got so excited. I ran and put on my best dress that I had made in school. Because that summer school, I took sewing in summer school. And I had made myself a pretty blue dress. And oh, I thought it was beautiful. So I rushed and I let the lady answer the door and let him in. And I was rushing, changing my clothes. And I came out. I was all dressed up, you know, made a big impression on Arthur, you know. And Arthur had a friend with him who had a car, because Arthur didn't have a car, but his friend had a car. And so I told him, well, my folks had gone. They got tired of waiting on me, and I was late getting home from church, and they'd gone. He said, let's go for a ride. My friend has a car. We'll go for a ride. And ordinarily, my folks wouldn't let me go out with boys by myself. But since he had the other fellow with him and they had gone and left me, well, I just went on with him, you know, and we went for a drive. And first place he took me was to meet his parents, which was his grandmother. His mother wasn't here. She was living in Greenville, Alabama, and his father had died, but he was living out here with his grandmother. And his so he took me by to meet his grandmother and his aunt and uncle. That's where he was living. Oh, that made a big impression on me, because they say when a young man introduces you to his people, they really like you, you know. So that made a good impression on me. But he brought me back home early before my folks got back home. And they liked him. So ordinarily, when I'd go out to little parties or anything, my brother had to go along because they didn't want me to go out with boys by myself. But they liked him so much and they trusted him, so they let me go out with him by myself. So we just, and I had been here 2 months when I met him. So the last month I was supposed to, we were supposed to stay out here 3 months. The last month I was here is when I met him, and I only knew him 1 month. And when it came time to go back to Texas, I just couldn't make up my mind. I wanted to go to Texas, and they wouldn't agree to let me stay out here. And my parents wouldn't. So I just sort of kept hinting around to my husband-to-be that, oh, I'd just do anything to stay out here. I don't want to go back to that old bad Texas. And he said, you'd do anything? I said, yeah, I sure would. And he said, well, what about marrying me? That's the way he proposed. And he used to tease me after. He said, I rescued her. She didn't want to go to Texas, so I rescued her. I'm a mariner. And my father wouldn't let me spend the first night with him. Oh, a little friend of mine was having a farewell party for me because we were supposed to be going back to Texas. Because Papa had his property back then. He couldn't just stay out here until he disposed of his property. Well, he hadn't planned to really stay out here anyway. And but my brother was going to still stay. He wasn't thinking about going back. So Papa said, well, I don't know whether these licenses are valid or not. You have to stay at home tonight. Young man, you go home, and you come back in the morning.
So, after you got married?
Yeah, slipped off that day and got married, because I was supposed to leave the next morning, you know. And we slipped off and got married that day. And I had a little girlfriend with me, Anna Louise Griffin was her name. And she went with me to get married. And we had the license. But it wasn't a gold seal on it. Papa looked at it and he said, there's no gold seal on here. How do I know this is a valid license? And I said, oh, Papa, you know I wouldn't say I was married if I wasn't. But he still wouldn't let me go home with him that night. He made me stay home. And they told him to go home, come back the next morning. So he came back the next morning, and I was eating my breakfast, and when I saw him coming, I got so full I couldn't eat. I began to get nervous then, because it looked like to me I hadn't dawned on, I got to stay with this man, I got to sleep with him. All I was thinking about, I'm getting to stay out here, you know. And then it dawned on me, oh, I got to sleep with this man. Then I started getting nervous. Oh, and so that day we went to the beach. After we saw my parents off, they went on, they let me stay. They went on back home, drove their car back to Texas. And so my husband and his same little friend with the car had come over. His name was Bird Briley. And so we just got in the car and went to the beach. Spent all day at the beach.
Which beach?
Santa Monica, same one where that picture was made. Santa Monica Beach. They call that little spot where we could go the Inkwell, you know, because it was a segregated part of the beach where we could go, colored could go.
And that's what you called it?
Yeah, we called it the Inkwell. All the colored people call it the Inkwell. We're going down to the Inkwell. So that's where we went, and we walked around the different amusement parks and things down there. And we spent the whole day at the beach, and when dark came, I said to my husband, where are we going to stay tonight? He hadn't even made plans where we were going to stay the first night we were married. And
because he lived with his grandmother?
Yeah, he lived with his grandmother.
And your parents were gone?
Yeah, my parents were gone. And they'd given up the room where we were rooming, you know. And he was staying with grandmother, and he was sharing a room with somebody else, so he couldn't take me to his grandmother's house. And so he said, oh, I don't know, I hadn't thought about it. So we started going around to people's houses that he knew, looking for a room, because that was the trend, and everybody, they just rented rooms. They didn't try to rent an apartment, because people weren't making that much money. And my husband was only making $30 a week then.
What did he do?
He was a porter at a Howard Automobile place. But he was a baker by trade. He finished Tuskegee Institute and finished the trade as a baker. And he had had a baker business before I met him. But you see, he was only about 19 when he had this business. And he would make the bakery goods and sell out everything he made. And then that night, he'd go out, take a girl out, and spend all his money. And then when the bills would come due, he didn't have the money to pay his bills. So he didn't stay in business very long because he hadn't learned about how to take care of his money. So he'd gone out of business. But his ambition was, after we got married, was to go back into the business as a baker, you know. And so he's had this little job as a janitor, a porter, till he could save up enough money to go in business again. But anyway, we couldn't find a room. Everybody he went to, they didn't have a room available. So we ended up at his grandmother's house. And they all liked me very much, and I liked them. And they had their spare room rented out to a lady who lived out in service. And she only came home on Thursdays. And so she wasn't home that night, but she was going to come home the next day. This must have been a Wednesday, I guess, because she was going to be off on Thursday. And so they said, well, we'll let you stay in her room tonight, and then you can find a room tomorrow. And said, but now you have to get out of there early in the morning, because we don't know what time she's coming home, you know. And so we did, and boy, the next morning, he got up early to go to work, about 6 o'clock. And I got up, too, and got dressed, and got out of that room so the lady wouldn't know we'd spent the night in her room. So I was in the other part of the house, in the living room, you know. And when the lady came, she didn't even know we spent the night in her room. So we found a room with another relative that day nearby. And so we roomed until my folks came back out here. They moved back out here. See, that was in 24, so in 25, they moved back out of here because Papa disposed of all of his property then, and he came back out here to stay because both of his children were here. My brother and I both were here, and then we weren't thinking about going back.
Was it hard for your parents to leave Texas? Did they feel they had roots, or did they feel that Los Angeles was going to be a new life.
They felt Los Angeles was going to be a new life because they did have roots there, right? And they had relatives, and his mother was still living at that time. And his mother and sisters and brothers were still there. But he was so fond of his children, he wanted to be where his children were. Papa was really, really a very good dad. And he just wanted to be around where we were, you know. So that's when he moved back out here. But Los Angeles wasn't as nice as he thought it was going to be because he came with his cash money and he bought a house, paid cash for the house. He bought it in an area where they didn't want colored, but he didn't know it.
Where was this?
East 58th Place, between Central Avenue and Hooper Avenue, just south of Slauson Avenue, was a little strip that belonged to the county. But the mailing address was Los Angeles. But when you needed the police, you had to use the county police. You couldn't use the city police. And so this house he bought was a white family, and it was not restricted. They hadn't signed the restrictive covenant. But all the other houses on that street were restricted. And so he didn't know anything about any restrictions anyway. But he bought the house and paid cash for it. $3,200. Paid $3,200 for it. That was the price in 1925. And it was a cute little bungalow house. And my mother, being real light, they didn't know colored had bought the house. Because I didn't move in with them right away. And so they were there about a month before I moved in with them. My husband and I moved in with them after they were there about a month. And they hadn't seen my father. They didn't only see my mother around there during the day because he'd get up early every morning and go to work because he had opened his own garage business here, you know. So he'd leave home early every morning. And they didn't see him around, you know. They only saw my mother. So they didn't know colored people had bought the house until I moved in. And then I was there every day with my mother, you know. And then that's when they realized. So they came, a committee group of them came and talked to my dad and said, well, they didn't want the colored in the neighborhood, and they would like to buy him out. Would he sell?
The neighbors?
Huh?
The neighbors?
Yeah, no, some of the neighbors, but we didn't know who they were. And so Papa said, yeah, I'll sell it to you. If you don't want me here, I'll sell it to you. And then they finally got around to the price, and he wanted $4,200 for it. He had paid $3,200. He wanted $4,200. They said, well, you didn't pay but $3,200. He said, well, I have to have some extra money for moving expenses. Says, I can't sell it to you for what I paid for it because I had to go out and probably pay more because he had looked all over town and that was the best bargain he could find. And it was because he'd looked at houses that cost $9,000. Wasn't any better than that one. But he got a good buy on that one, you know. And so he said, well, I can't sell it for the same price I paid for it. And they said, well, we'll think about it. So they thought about it, and so instead of coming back saying that we will give you 42, they just came back, a group of them came back, 50 of them came back, and stood on our lawn and rang the doorbell. Two of them came up and rang the doorbell and told us to move. We had to move before daylight in the morning, and they weren't going to buy you out, and we're not going to buy you out. We're not going to pay you more than you paid for it, but you had to move and move before daylight in the morning. But my dad wasn't home when that happened. My mother was there, and I was there, and my husband was there, and an old young couple visiting us were there, and my brother was there. And so my brother answered the door, and my mother answered the door, and so she was there talking to them, and when they told her, and she saw those 50 people out there, that frightened her. So she started shaking, you know. Oh, boy, they just looked like to me, they just gloated over that. Oh, we got her now, you know. And then they got real big then, talking about, get out before daylight in the morning. And Mama just said, okay, you know, and shut the door. And they went on away. They jumped in their cars and drove away right quick, did it all real fast. And while they were there, we were there calling the police. That's when we found out we were not in the city. We couldn't use the city police. We had to use the county. And they didn't come for 2 hours later. It took them 2 hours to come. And we had Italian family on one side and a German family on the other side of us. And they were very nice and they were very friendly. And they told us, well, some of the sheriffs were in with the gang that came there. That's the reason it took them so long to come back when you call for the sheriff. It took them 2 hours to get there. And by the time they got there, My father was home by that time. But before they got there, we called my uncle, who was instrumental in us moving to Los Angeles. And my uncle was home, and he came out. He came out right away. And he looked like white, too, because he was the light-colored man. He was my mother's brother, and they had the same father and same mother, and they both were real light. So my uncle came out, and he was just walking up and down the street. Every white man he would meet, he'd stop and catch him in the collar of his shirt and ask him, and shake him, "Were you in that gang gonna run the niggas out?" And they were trembling, "No, sir, mister, no, sir, mister." And they weren't, they knew nothing about what had happened. They were just people coming home. They didn't know anything about this 50 people that had been there. But my uncle got his bluff in on them. The word got around, "There's a white man out there taking up for them." So, but anyway, 2 hours later, my dad came home, and the sheriff got there about the same time. My dad was cleaning his Winchester. He had a rifle from World War One, called a Winchester. And he was cleaning that and had it laying on the dining room table, cleaning it and getting it loaded. And the old sheriffs, when they came in, the first thing they did was go over and grab this gun from my dad. Didn't say, "What is the problem? Can we help you?" Just go and grab the gun and take it away from him. "You don't need this." And Papa cursed him out and grabbed it back and told him, "I'll be damned if I don't need it. If I'd have been here, there'd been some dead ones laying out there on my lawn, too. And so it's a good thing I wasn't here." And so they gave him the gun back, and they got out of there. They didn't even ask us what had happened, because they knew what had happened. See, they were in with the gang. They just left. But they went back and told spread the word that he's a bad nigger, you better leave him alone. But we didn't know that for a long time, that they had said that. Because one of the neighbors told us later that that's what they said. But just as a precaution, Papa went down on 12th and Central. That was the black business section at that time, 12th and Central Avenue. And he went down there and gathered up the people who were standing around on the street. I have a very warm feeling for those type of people, because they all volunteered to come out and help us protect our home. And they came out every night for a whole month and sat up. They took turns sitting up watching and waiting for them to come back. If they had come back, it would have been a race riot, because they were ready. They had their guns, and those who didn't have guns, Papa got guns for them. And they sat up every night waiting for me. Mama would do the cooking. And they sent me away over to my husband's grandparents' house, because I was, by that time, I was expecting my baby. I was pregnant, and I was expecting my baby. So they didn't want me to be around, you know, all that. And so I'd go to my grandmother-in-law's house and sleep every night. And I'd come back home during the day, stay there with my mother, you know. But nobody ever came back. So after a month, Papa figured, well, I guess it's died. In fact, the neighbors next door said, well, they've given up. They decided they're not going to bother you anymore. So we stayed there, and then my son was born, and he was the first colored kid to go to that school in that area. It was called Maramonte. It's still there. I think it's 62nd and Hooper Avenue. And my son was the first colored boy, colored child to go to that school. And my mother used to take him to school and go back and get him to keep him from anybody from bothering him, you know. And so one day she was going to pick him up, and she heard saw some little boys on the sidewalk waiting for him, waiting for this little nigger boy, as they said. And Mama said, "What are you going to do with this little nigger boy? We're going to beat him up." "Who told you to beat him up?" "Our mothers told us." And see, that's the mothers teaching those kids hatred, to beat this little boy up because he's colored. And so my mother went to the principal of the school and told him what was happening. And the principal didn't know anything about it until my mother went and told him. And he assured my mother that nothing will happen to your grandson. "You just don't you come after him anymore, and I'll assure you that nothing will happen to him. We don't know what he did, but whatever he did worked, because nobody ever bothered him anymore." So he went to school and finished grammar school there. And then I finally moved away out of the neighborhood, and then he started going to another school. But
was Arthur doing during this time?
My husband, you mean?
Because
my son's name Arthur too. You know, I named him after him. He was working. You see, that's when my mother was taking my little boy to school, because my husband was working every day. He'd leave home early every morning, you know. And at that time, he had gotten a job at a drugstore out in Hollywood. He worked, and that was on Western Avenue. Westwood and Weston, I think that was the name of the street. Yeah, he was working at a drugstore as a delivery boy. And then at lunchtime, he'd work at the fountain, help serve the lunch. But when they had prescriptions, items to be delivered, he did the delivering then. He had his own little car. And so that's what he was doing, working every day. And he didn't get home till dusk dark either, because I think they worked people then 12 hours a day, because he had long hours.
And what were you doing?
Nothing. I was just taking care of my baby. I wasn't working. But my mother, she preferred to take him to school. She liked to walk, you know. So she'd take him to school.
And then did you have some of the same friends you did from the Polytechnic? And what kinds of things did you do for fun?
Oh, yeah. We had a little young married couples club that I belonged to. And we'd have little club meetings, and we'd have lunch, and we would sew. We'd take our sewing with us to the club meeting. Do have embroidering or crocheting or whatever kind of sewing that they wanted to do. Someone were making dresses and things. But we'd take that to the club meeting. We'd have lunch and we'd talk. And we'd take our babies with us to the club meeting. And we had lots of fun doing that. Then, of course, I was quite active in the church. Westminster Presbyterian Church. We're on the west side to church, although we lived on the east side. But my husband, see, his folks lived on the west side, and they had joined this little church, Westminster Presbyterian Church, on the west side, 35th Place and Dinker Avenue. And so I sang in the choir, and my husband played the violin. And he'd play his violin sometimes. When they'd have special programs, he'd play the violin. Oh, and I played the piano a little bit, too. So we'd play the piano. I'd play the piano. He'd play the violin. They'd have us on program playing violin and piano solo, you know. And so we were quite active in the church. And then I'd do shopping, you know, grocery shopping, and do the cooking. What little cooking I knew. My husband had to teach me how to cook, because I didn't know much about cooking. My mother hadn't taught me how to cook. But he taught me, and I enjoyed it too. So, and then on Sundays we would go visiting people. People used to visit a lot then, because didn't many people even have radios then. Fresh radios came out with the earplug type radios, you know. But your Sunday afternoon, you could drop in on your friends and they'd be glad to have you. But now you don't drop in on anybody because they're so interested in their television programs. But that's what we would do. And then Papa would like to take trips on Sundays. We'd go to San Bernardino. He had some friends who lived in San Bernardino. We'd drive out to San Bernardino. We'd drive out to the beach. We'd go on some outing, you know, like to a park. We'd go to a park occasionally. So there was lots to do. And then go to the little house. Still had little house parties. People had little house parties. Little dancing house parties. So we kept quite busy. And then a baby, having a young baby, that keeps you busy too. Washing diapers. I used the cloth diapers. Didn't have Pampers then.
Did you have other children?
No, I just had that one. I had a hard time getting pregnant with that one, so I didn't try anymore after my husband got sick. We were only married 3 years, and he got sick and died.
What happened?
This little drugstore where he was working, he was the delivery boy, you know, and this rainy season, he had to deliver, and his little car that he had needed a new top on it. And we hadn't, I guess we could have if he'd realized how important it was, but he hadn't taken time to have a new top put on his car. So he's delivering these orders from the drugstore in this little car and getting himself wet. And he was working all day wet, you know. And he caught a bad cold, and that cold, the doctor wasn't a very good doctor, I don't guess, because he didn't tell my husband to stay home and rest. He just gave him some medicine and let him keep on working. And he was working and had this bad cold. And his resistance was low, and it went into tuberculosis. And he caught tuberculosis and stayed sick a year, and then he died. But we'd been married 2 years when he got sick, but by the time he died, we'd been married 3 years. And then he died. So that was sad. We were still living with my parents because I was going to, we were trying to save our money to buy a lot and build our own home. We wanted to build our own home. And he also wanted to go into the bakery business. So we were trying to save money to go into business and buy a lot and build our own home. But he got sick and died. So I was still with my parents when he died, and then I decided, well, I got to get me a job. Now, I hadn't ever worked before. My husband didn't want me to work, and before I married, my father didn't want me to work. So I said, I'm going to get me a job.
How old were you then?
Well, I was 20 then. I was 20.